Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
You know, I was thinking about the death of Dolly Parton, and when you first heard about it, tell me if your reaction wasn't, oh no, because that was mine, and I think a lot of people had that reaction, and I was thinking about that, because usually when you hear about the passing of a well-known celebrity, you're shocked and maybe sad, but it's not, oh no, but I think because of the way people felt about Dolly, you just thought, oh no. Just my little observation.
Yeah. And not just that, just the, all of the good things that she's done. And you know,
yeah, I mean,
to take away somebody who's doing all of those good things is really sad.
Yeah, I think because of that part of her, that contributed to that oh no feeling, because right. Here was a woman who was a philanthropist, and remember when she gave $1 million to help the development of the COVID vaccine?
Yeah. Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
And all the books in her imagination program,
right?
When whatever was, that's called.
When there was that fire near Dollywood, she paid for to put people in hotels and help rebuild. And
she gave individual families money every month for a while, I think. More on that coming up a little bit later. Code of Many Colors, 1971. Dolly called that one of her favorites, inspired by her childhood when her mom would sew old scraps and rags together to make clothes for all the kids. And she told her children about the Old Testament story of Joseph's colorful coat. And Dolly Parton would always recall how proud she was to wear her mother's handmade coat to school, even though the other kids would tease her. I was trying to remember the occasion of meeting Dolly. I don't remember exactly where or what was going on, but I do remember thinking, man, she is on stage, larger than life, and in person, tiny, except, of course, for her huge personality. She was like 5 feet, and definitely, I think her heels might have been five feet too. But, and as you've heard, always lovely, always funny, always with the self-deprecating humor, and warm and witty. More on Dolly coming up here. 9 to 5. She actually wrote that on the set of the movie in between takes, and it was number one on the pop charts, number one on the country charts, and she won a couple of Grammys for that. And when she was writing it, she didn't have her guitar, but she had her long acrylic fingernails, and so she kind of strummed the melody on her fingernails. How about that? Film critic Blake Stubbs joins us now to talk more about Dolly and the movies, and 9 to 5 was the big one, wasn't it, Blake?
It sure was, and what a debut sort of major motion picture to have. I mean, to as a vehicle to enter that world of big Hollywood. I mean, Dolly Parton at the time 9 to 5 had come out had already been known the world over. I mean, she was a TV icon, you know, from the Porter Wagner show, from her own show, etc. And adding her into the mix with Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin made for a really interesting combination on screen. You know, and Dolly would never, I think this goes without saying, and we'll talk a little bit more about it later, but she never found herself to be really an actress. You know, she was more of a personality and an icon that just leapt right off the screen to audiences. And while she was not in a lot of major motion pictures, 9 to 5 was really the big debut for her in the eyes of Hollywood. And I think a lot of things work in that movie with Dolly being the cast actress to be Doralee Rhodes. Namely, I love her interplay with Dabney Coleman. I think it's very funny in the movie. Mm-hmm. I also think that her chemistry with Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin is just unmistakably strong. And it's one of those things where, you know, if acting is more about like a pursuit of truth, Dolly just brought truth. She just brought what she felt was as real as it could be on the screen. And interestingly enough, one of the conditions for her to do the movie was that she would write the song that we would come to know as 9 to 5, the anthem of the movie. And not only did she win Grammy, she was nominated for an Academy Award for that very song.
Mm-hmm.
So to stand toe-to-toe with Hollywood greatness and also be yourself, it's very clear that she had a very niche presence that was just filled with effervescence and necessary to make that particular film work. And it's even spawned like a Broadway musical that is now done all over the place in community theaters everywhere, and arguably has a far better life as a community theater production than it will ever have, you know, on the Broadway stage. But something to note, I've seen multiple productions of that musical. And the Dora Lee Rhodes character, every actress who plays it does her best to channel Dolly.
You know, it's
which
one thing.
Makes it it's one, so.
What? Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
It's,
yeah.
It's one thing to say she's a natural and she was just herself, but doing that with a big movie camera a couple of feet from your face, that's a whole other thing, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, just to jump ahead, because I know we only have a limited amount of time, but talking about Dolly, the Hollywood icon, as well as being the music icon and television icon and humanitarian, you know, Steel Magnolias is another one that I would point people to. Because, again, you have a huge ensemble of talent. And then there's Dolly. And Dolly feels like a really necessary ingredient because that movie has some serious dramatic turns, but it needs the type of presence that she brings to the screen to make the entire thing work. She's almost like the glue in every project that she's in. If you're there to see a movie, you're there to see Dolly, because I think audiences needed Dolly. And it was just the right casting choice. And similarly, like, you know, she always has her great sayings, you know, the old wisdom of from like where she grew up kind of feels like it's injected into every role. And I feel like there's a realness to what she could bring on screen. You know, she also had other big roles like Best Little Whorehouse in Texas opposite Burt Reynolds. You know, you almost forget at times Burt Reynolds is in the movie because Dolly is there. And I think that that's a big thing. Burt Reynolds at the time was one of the biggest stars in the world, but there was Dolly. And lastly, I mean, Straight Talk is another one where it's like there's no real ensemble here. I mean, she's working opposite James Woods, but that movie was catered entirely around her. And she plays a small town dance instructor who kind of gives up her life in the small town to go chase life in the big city, which happens to be Chicago, where she becomes a radio sensation. And really, it's about giving, you know, Straight Talk advice to people who need it. And I think that was something that, you know, was really maybe in a way Dolly's mission in life. I mean, if you think about her music, if you think about her contributions to everything that she's done in this world, she just wanted to put good into the world. And whether you like Straight Talk or not doesn't even matter. We're not here to review films today. We're just here to talk about the, you know, the presence that Dolly brought to the big screen. And for me, I think it's just she's one of those unmistakable personalities. She could have played herself in every single thing, and I would have still enjoyed watching her do it.
Right. Yeah. Extremely likable. They talk about Dolly in Chicago shooting that movie with James Woods. And for one scene, she was on stage at a dive bar in Wicker Park, the Rainbow Club. And the owner was talking about how when she first walked in, she said, "Wow, what a perfect little dump this is." And so, and anyway, you get the same story everywhere from anyone who ever had contact with Dolly. It's all good, all positive, all wonderful, wasn't it?
It really was. And I think I said it yesterday. I think I had a group chat of a bunch of friends who all were mourning this. I mean, I feel, and I'm not the only one. I know everybody out there was really struck by this news because of it was a brief battle with cancer. That took her from us, and you know, respecting her privacy, you know, dealing with illness and everything, but the world feels like they all knew Dolly. Yep. and that's that speaks to the fact that she was a true American icon, and this is just a heavy loss. It really is.
Yeah, it's as I said earlier, everybody's reaction was of course sadness and shock, but the first reaction was oh no, because we all love Dolly. Blake Stubbs.
Exactly.
Appreciate the comments on the movies. Thank you. Talk to you again soon. Dolly Music Hall Morning. And that one from 1974. Dolly got the name actually from a young girl, an 8-year-old girl, who once asked for her autograph at a concert, and Dolly said she had beautiful red hair, and she was just looking up at me, and I said, "You're the prettiest little thing I ever saw." And when she told me her name was Jolene, I said, "Jolene, Jolene, Jolene, that's pretty, and it sounds like a song. I'm going to write a song about that." But as you know, the storyline of that song was actually inspired by a grown woman, a redheaded bank teller, that Dolly felt was getting a little too friendly with her husband, Carl. Apparently, she had a crush on him, and Dolly said Carl loved going to the bank because she paid him so much attention, and it was kind of like a running joke between them. She said to Carl, "You're spending a lot of time at the bank. I don't think we've got that kind of money." And anyway, eventually the song Jolene hit in 1974. Entertainment news now. Cindy Perlman, Gaber in Las Vegas. And I imagine you had a couple of encounters with Dolly over the years, Cindy.
Good morning, Bob. Boy, that hit me so hard yesterday. She was just such a bright light. I did have many encounters with her for the Sun Times and the New York Times over the years. Many great memories. One of my favorites, though, was in Chicago for that movie Straight Talk, where she played a radio announcer. And I don't know what they were doing in her suite, but they had thrown a bunch of the pillows off the couch and they were on the floor. And of course, I'm such a klutz. The minute I got in there, I fall over one of the pillows, bash into the couch. Really great. You know, my face goes red and Dolly goes, "Miss Perlman, have you been drinking today? And if you've been drinking, I want some of what you're having." I was like, she totally diffused it. And she was just so lovely and funny. And another time I did her in L.A. for an interview, and I asked her, I'm like, "Dolly, if we came to your house at like 5 in the morning, would you be all dollied up or would you look like, you know, in sweats and, I don't know, a T-shirt?" And she was like, "Are you kidding me?" She's like, "There's no way." She goes, "Even if the UPS man's coming, I'm in the wig, the shirt, the heels." She goes, "You will never, ever see me not dollied."
She made fun of herself, that was a great part of her personality. I loved the line from her that she used this more than once, where she said, "It cost a lot to look this cheap."
To look this cheap,
But she said she counted her blessings more than she counted her money, though. Dolly Parton.
The funny, I'll tell you one more. We went to Louisiana for Steel Magnolias on the set. I mean, it's never been hotter. It was so hot. It was so humid. And all the women, Shirley MacLaine and Julia Roberts and Daryl Hannah, they all were taking ice and putting it on their wrists and making this big deal out of it. And everybody was hot. And finally, Julia said to Dolly, "Why aren't you hot? You're in the wig and like a major costume." And Dolly said, "You know what? I grew up in a one-room house. We never had air conditioning. When I was born, my dad paid for my birth in cornmeal. Like, he didn't even have the money to pay the doctor. He paid him in kitchen goods." So she said, "You know, I grew up dreaming of being rich and famous. So a hot day, I'm not going to complain about that. You'll never see me complain." And I don't think I ever did see her complain about anything.
No, you never heard her negative at all. What a rags to riches story it was. Let's talk about what's coming to a streaming channel, and everybody's waiting for more Slow Horses, and we're going to get those shows soon again. And Gary Oldman is so great in that, isn't he?
He's so great. I got to interview him yesterday, and he's so funny too. He plays this character on Slow Horses based on a book. They're going into season 6, premiering September 16th. And he plays this one of these really memorable characters, Jackson Lamb. They're all MI5 agents in London who've done something bad. So they've been banished to this, they call it the slog house, where agents who can't be fired, but they are just thrown in there to do nothing. But these guys end up looking into all these serious cases. And Gary plays Jackson Lamb. He's unkempt and he's rude. He's sour all the time. And, you know, he farts a lot. That's just one of his character traits. So I asked Oldman if he picked up any of his character's bad habits. And he said, quote, "I don't smoke. I don't drink anymore. I'm much softer with people than Jackson." And he said, "And by the way, I haven't farted since 1971. So that's officially on the record now, Bob.
Now, when you were interviewing him, was his hair greasy? And was he sweaty? And unkempt.
He wasn't that bad, but he was it looked like he was wearing black and brown checked pajama bottoms with like a weird top. And at one point he did admit, he goes, "I'm just kind of tired." And his publicist was like, "Okay, this is over now." And he was just very real about everything. And he said this really has been the role of a lifetime. And then he slipped. They already said it's renewed for season 7. He said it's renewed for season 8 too.
Love that show, Slow Horses. Can't wait for it in September again. And also, Only Murders in the Building, we know about the 6th season now, don't we?
We do. Yesterday, Hulu dropped some news and stills from the 6th season, not the trailer, which should be coming any minute, but it's going to be called Only Murders in London. The whole gang's moving it from New York to London, including Steve Martin and Martin Short, Selena Gomez, the special guest, that's always the best part, Tina Fey, Olivia Colman, Martin Short's reported girlfriend, Meryl Streep, David Tennant, Martin Freeman, and many more. And they're looking into a murder case of Cinda Channing. Something happened bad in London. They're trying to catch her killer. And we're going to see a bunch of English crazy characters premiering December 8th on Hulu and Disney Plus.
And also we're hearing about a new Amy Schumer project. And she's going to star and produce a new film, huh?
She is. This sounds good, too. She's going to produce and star in something called I Don't. I Don't is the theme. And the movie's called Best Divorce Ever for now. That could change because they're taking it to Toronto to the film festival to find a deal. But it's already been filmed, and she plays a woman named Clarissa along with her husband, Franklin. And they get divorced, and they want to have a decent family life together. And that's the whole thing. Can you have a good family life even after you consciously uncouple, as Gwyneth Paltrow says? And there's, you know, problems with the kids and misguided attempts at holidays and all kinds of fun stuff like that. So looks good. I'm sure that'll get picked up right away in Toronto.
Yeah, it should. All right. Thank you, Cindy. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks, Bob.
Sponsored by JeffBuysYourHouse.com. 1977. Dolly crossed over from the country charts to get to the top of the pop charts. Unlike most of her songs, Dolly didn't write that one. Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil did. And those were the two who came up with I Can't Just Help Believin' for B.J. Thomas. He also recorded Here You Come Again. Let's see, Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil also responsible for On Broadway, We Gotta Get Out of This Place, You've Lost That Lovin' Feeling, Soul and Inspiration. It's 9:13, and John Williams will be on the radio here in about an hour. And, you know, I was reading Chris Jones in the Trib today about Dolly, and this was so true. Chris wrote, Parton masterfully stayed out of every fight in the culture wars, preaching love, philanthropy, mentorship, and tolerance until her dying breath. Dollywood is in a town with a Trump store, and yet the LGBTQ plus community is welcomed in Dollywood as part of Parton's loyal fan base. I think the fact that she was so universally loved is responsible for all of that news coverage yesterday, and it was quite something, wasn't it, the way the story was covered?
Yeah. I was listening to a couple of guys on a sports station this morning, and they were talking about it. I mean, she just cut across all barriers, and I saw online today somebody said we're all suffering from postpartum depression right now.
That's good.
Yeah.
Chris Jones also wrote, there's no obvious heir. Who else do we have who stands for fun, literacy?
Yep.
She put more books in school libraries than any other human. She stands for great music and, above all, family. You know, her fans were all ages, all political persuasions, all music fans of different genres. Who else could you say that about? Everybody loved Dolly.
You know, and it's funny because I don't want to say we gave her a pass, but she seemed genuinely not interested in talking about politics. And I was watching a Barbara Walters interview that she did this morning, and she said, I have my opinions. Somebody was asking her about Donald Trump, for instance. She said, but I know if you want to be successful in show business, stay out of it. Sometimes we criticize famous people. Michael Jordan ran into a little bit about this. You should use your popularity, you know, your your position to say something. And what she, though, did say was, be authentic, be honest, love everybody. I don't know if this is too woke, but she said, I've got every stripe in my own family. You know, she said LGBTQ and transgender and gay and straight and everything. She said, so I'm just going to love everybody for who they are, which is very, you know, arms open. But that was her vibe. And then after that, she didn't say, I support the Democrats or I support the Republicans. She just said, I'm my authentic self.
She used her platform to help people. She used her great wealth as she was such a philanthropist.
Yeah.
That's how she used her stardom. And I think that's one of the reasons why when you heard the news yesterday, normally you hear about a famous person and you are shocked or sad. With Dolly, everybody's reaction was the same. It was, oh, no.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Exactly. I don't remember what we were going to do at 1 o'clock yesterday, but when that news dropped, I went, that's what we're going to do now. I mean, I can't talk about anything else. Poor Bill Murdoch. He gave us his summer music playlist. I said, Billy, Dolly's bumping you, man. I can't think about anything other than how surprised I was. Her health wasn't great, but we didn't see this coming.
No, we didn't. I mean, she had canceled various appearances in the last year or two, but very, very recently she had a statement about her health, and she did it, of course, with great humor, and nobody thought the end was this close.
Her mom died at 80. Her dad died at 79.
Yeah, that's right. I think that Dollywood will have more visitors than ever over the next few years, don't you?
Yeah, right. See, I heard or read somewhere, Bob, we're just getting flooded with information that her wealth is about $450 million. But she didn't seem to be so interested in accumulating it as giving it away.
Absolutely.
I've heard from so many people who said their kids or grandkids get books every month from Dolly Parton.
Yep.
I guess I'd heard about that. My kids weren't involved in that, so I didn't know about it much.
She didn't make a big deal of it. That's why you didn't hear about it.
You remember when COVID hit and she gave $1 million to a hospital in Nashville?
She liked counting her blessings, not her money, she said.
Yeah. So if my computer's messed up. I don't know if I'm going to be able to play part of the Dolly Parton interview with Barbara Walters. But it was 1978, so it was a very interesting time. And there's Barbara peppering her with questions about her appearance and her breasts.
Oh, was that when she called Dolly a hillbilly?
Yeah. Well, no.
Are the people she grew up with hillbillies?
Barbara Walters said, would my people and call your people, which just think about that, hillbillies. And she says, well, yeah. She goes, yeah, but, you know, we were also very smart. We weren't educated, but we had good horse sense. And we were proud. And I think that isn't that one of the biggest takeaways from Dolly Parton, that wherever you come from, you can be proud of what you've made of yourself, whatever it may be.
And her smarts came through, and she demonstrated that by her sharpness in business. Great story about that coming up here when I do the record collection.
Well, then I'll get out of the way. So we'll still talk about Dolly Parton a little bit, and I know some of you want to as well. Why not? I mean, who's a better exemplar for all of us? Also, our friend Bob Bertog will join us today, the president of the Bertog Landscape Company. He'll answer some of those questions. Our friends from Adler Planetarium reached out to us, and they said, you should hear our news over at Adler, some cool space stuff. So we'll do that. We've got some speedy jokes coming your way as well.
Spike Odell's probably listening in Tennessee now. He perked up when you said space.
Yeah, and he posted a song about Dolly.
Yeah, right. Well, he's there. He's there in Tennessee.